Thank you for joining us today. I'm the ESOP guy, and let's continue on this journey to an ESOP. So if you're tuning in for the first time, this podcast is a resource for those that are thinking they might want to consider an ESOP as a strategy for their business. Maybe it's a growth strategy, maybe it's succession, or even an exit plan for the owners of the business. So if you haven't listened to the podcast before and you have an interest in it, go to journeytoanesop.com and you'll find all the podcast episodes. Today, I have the esteemed privilege of interviewing Miguel Paredes with Prudent Fiduciary Services. And in our world of ESOPs, Miguel has a very interesting background. He lives and works out of Los Angeles, California, but his organization provides fiduciary advisory services, really with a focus on ESOP trustee services throughout the United States. Miguel's experience is extensive in that he served at the supervisory level with the Department of Labor and with the Employee Benefits Security Administration. His team includes attorneys, CPAs, valuation experts, and some of the best folks in the business. So with that, Miguel, it's an honor to have you as part of our podcast today.
Thank you, Philip. I really appreciate you having me on.
Great. Thank you. So Miguel, I first want to ask you about your background, because it's not every day that you find professionals in our industry that have worked on both sides, the Department of Labor and as trustees. Can you speak a little bit about how you made that decision to move from the Department of Labor to founding your current professional service firm for doing ESOP work?
Yeah, absolutely. So as you mentioned, my previous experience was with the U.S. Department of Labor, Employee Benefit Security Administration. This is the agency that is responsible for enforcing Title I of the Employee Retirement Income Security Act. Essentially, the agency is responsible for overseeing employee benefit plans, 401k plans, pension plans, health plans, and, of course, part of that, ESOPs. So I joined the Department of Labor in 2005. Prior to that, I was working in the private sector as a corporate auditor. I have a business background and audit experience. I joined the Department of Labor and in their Los Angeles regional office, initially as an investigator, and then got promoted to senior investigator and then supervisor investigator. And really, I found myself focusing on ESOP enforcement. So through training at the department and leveraging my business and audit experience, really started focusing on ESOP enforcement. And eventually, I was managing a team of 10 investigators and was responsible at that regional office to ensuring that the ESOP program, the ESOP enforcement program, was being executed according to the agency's goals and objectives for that program. Very proud of my time at the Department of Labor. I was there for 12 years. Certainly learned a lot. It was a real key to helping further my career, and really worked with a lot of great people there. And so in terms of how I found myself in the ESOP world as a trustee, you know, as you could imagine, during the 12 years I spent at the Department of Labor and focusing on ESOP enforcement, I saw a lot of different ESOPs. We looked at the formation of new ESOPs, the ongoing administration of ESOPs. And the focus of our inquiry was always the ESOP fiduciary. So we would look at company fiduciaries, ESOP trustees, and I tried to determine whether the ESOP fiduciaries in the marketplace are fulfilling their fiduciary obligations under the federal law that we were enforcing. So through those enforcement efforts, I certainly saw a number of good ESOP programs, but we did see some issues. We saw some bad actors and some missteps. And some fiduciaries that were not implementing best practices, that were not fulfilling their fiduciary obligations in the way that they should in their role as an ESOP fiduciary. So I took, you know, after about 12 years, through the enforcement work and some of the outreach work that I would do, I was also fortunate enough to represent the department at different employee benefit organizations, whether it's an ESOP organization, and I would go out to speak to the employee benefit organizations about either fiduciary best practices, Department of Labor enforcement, and specifically, you know, within the ESOP context as well. And so through the interactions that I had with the ESOP community and the enforcement work that I was doing, I noticed that there seemed to be a need for good, solid, independent trustees in the marketplace. Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, I saw a business opportunity. I realized that I could take what I've learned over the 12 years at the department and the expertise that I had developed related to what it means and what it takes to be a good fiduciary. And instead of investigating companies or investigating other fiduciaries, I could be a professional fiduciary myself, be that ESOP trustee, for example, in the ESOP space, and work together with companies and help establish successful ESOPs from the very beginning and help with the ongoing care and administration of ESOPs and be the trustee myself. And it wasn't an easy decision. Again, I really enjoyed my time at the department. I was very proud of my time enjoyed a successful career there. But I really felt that this was a tremendous opportunity. And so I took the leap and established my practice. And the rest is history. I really feel like, thankfully, my unique background has resonated in the ESOP space. And now we're certainly doing a lot of work in helping ensure that ESOPs are formed in the right way and that they are being administered the way they should be. And again, hopefully bringing our knowledge and experience to bear and executing that trustee role in what we think is implementing best practices. So.
No, I think that's such a valuable resource. And that's why it's so unique. And again, I want just to be, you know, such a cool thing to have you on the podcast with that experience. You know, a lot of the people that are listening to this podcast, some of them are really just checking out ESOPs for the first time. And when we talk about the Department of Labor, because it comes up in all kinds of conversations at the very front end and all throughout, and then as you mentioned, after the ESOP's created, can you explain for those people the role that the Department of Labor plays in the process of putting an ESOP together and the ongoing involvement that they have after the transaction?
Department of Labor isn't really involved in the establishment of ESOPs. Certainly, the Department of Labor Employee Benefits Security Administration agency that I mentioned and that I work for is responsible for the federal oversight of the employee benefit plan. So the ESOPs, like other employee benefit plans, are regulated by the Department of Labor and actually the IRS as well. So their role is once an ESOP is in place and, you know, they help ensure that the ESOPs in the marketplace are compliant with the federal regulations. And again, that agency I work for was specifically focused on Title I of the federal law, the Employee Retirement Income Security Act. So those are the fiduciary provisions of that law. So really, the focus of that enforcement was looking at those individuals that are responsible for caring for the ESOP and its participants and ensuring that those that are overseeing the employee benefit plan, the ESOP, are doing so in the right way, are adhering to the plan documents, are making good prudent decisions, that they understand what is required of them as a fiduciary. They understand what they need to do to have that successful ESOP and compliant ESOP. And that when they are fulfilling their responsibilities, they're doing so always with an eye towards the ESOP participants' best interests. So they're not looking out for their own best interests. They're not looking out for, example, client sponsors' best interests. It's always, as an ESOP fiduciary, as an ESOP trustee, you always need to look out for the best interests of the ESOP's participants and beneficiaries, so ultimately you're representing in your own as an ESOP. So the department's role is to review and investigate ESOPs. They launch an investigation of an ESOP for a variety of reasons, whether it's part of their enforcement program. ESOPs have been a priority for the Department of Labor and Employee Benefits Security Administration Agency for a long time, actually. I think for at least 20 years, the ESOP, review of ESOPs have been a program priority. And so as part of that program, they'll open up a number of ESOP inquiries every year, but they're also through maybe a participant complaint, maybe a referral from another agency about an issue that they may have seen in a particular ESOP. The agency also does specific targeting based on the reporting that's required by employee benefit plans. Every employee benefit plan needs to file a Form 5500, so there's some targeting based on certain metrics that the agency uses. And so they'll open an inquiry on an ESOP and get a review. If there was an ESOP transaction within, the statute of limitations, they'll look at that. They'll look at the ongoing administration, the adherence with the plan documents, the payment of benefits, et cetera. So that's the role. Really, more it's more oversight.
Yeah, review and oversight
review and oversight. Yeah, at the end of the day.
Yeah, and so I think when you look at that role that they play, and this is, I really love this about your practice because you have both sides, you've experienced both sides of the transaction. From a DOL perspective, what would you say is the ideal process of putting an ESOP deal together? It's really the first part of the question. And then also, how would you describe to folks that are not experienced with ESOPs the DOL process agreement?
Sure. That's a good question. First of all, certainly as a practicing trustee, I think the process agreement is very valuable. The process agreements, there's been now more than one agreement, and these are as a result of the Department of Labor's enforcement efforts. And the process agreement is an agreement between the Department of Labor and a particular trustee in the marketplace. And this is an agreement that was put into place in order to resolve a specific complaint and enforcement action. The process agreements overall, I think, are very valuable in that it really has helped with the transparency in terms of specifically what the Department of Labor is looking for from a trustee in the formation of new ESOPs in an ESOP transaction. Prior to these process agreements, the department had some proposed regulations that went back to the late 80s that had some general guidance about fiduciary responsibility related to an ESOP transaction, general guidance about what the fair market value, what does adequate consideration mean, what does fair market value mean? Because at the end of the day, just to take a step back, an ESOP transaction is a transaction involving an employee benefit plan and a party of interest. And so that is per se a prohibited transaction, but there is an exception to that pursuant to the federal law, which says, you know, hey, we could, you can engage in this transaction. An ESOP can purchase shares from a related party, shares of the employer's stock, so long as it's done at the fair price and for adequate consideration. And so, but these proposed regulations were didn't really go into what in detail what a trustee needs to do in terms of a robust process to ensure that the ESOP is well represented and is paying no more than that fair price. Mm-hmm. And so these process agreements, they go into great detail in terms of the Department of Labor's expectations and really an outline for trustee best practices in a transaction. So you know, I'll just go through really quickly. The process agreement focuses on whether the ESOP trustee properly investigated the independent valuation firm's qualifications. First of all, is that valuation firm truly independent? And are they qualified to value the business in a particular transaction? The trustees also,
and that would be like the qualifications would be like, do they have industry experience, or what valuation qualifications are you looking for?
Oh, sure. That's a great question. So it would be, first of all, is that valuation firm, are they properly trained? What type of training have they received? Of course, what type of certifications do they have? Do they have valuation experience? Have they valued businesses in a particular industry? Hopefully it's an industry that the subject company conducts business in. What types of resources does that valuation firm have? Do they do a lot of ESOP valuation work, or is their practice mostly valuing estates and divorce proceedings, for example? That, you know, it's important to have a valuation firm that has valued businesses for business purposes, such as ESOP formations. For example, we have a very extensive questionnaire where we ask all about those questions and experience, as I said, the training, certification, so that we understand, you know, we look at sample valuation reports, check references, and ensure that the evaluation firms that we work with are highly qualified. So, for example, we have vetted about 45 different valuation firms across the country. And you know, some of the valuation firms that wanted to work with us just, quite frankly, didn't meet our standards. Out of the 45, we probably worked with about 25 different valuation firms, and we've now further whittled it down to about, I'd say, about 10 to 15 that are highly qualified and that we've had really positive experience in a transaction where they've delivered at a high level. So the qualifications are important. Also, whether or not that valuation firm is truly independent. Has that valuation firm done work previously for the company? That would bring that independence in potentially into question. So they have to be highly qualified and an independent party. As mm-hmm. these ESOP transactions are really need to be true arm's length transactions. That's why a plan sponsor that's thinking about forming an ESOP, they need to go out and find an independent trustee, and that trustee will then hire that independent valuation firm and counsel so that you have a true arm's length transaction. So once you find that you've got you've been able to identify a qualified valuation firm, pursuant to the process agreement and just, you know, common sense, trustee needs to ensure that the trustee and that valuation firm receive good information, complete, accurate information, financial information, other information to value the company and the employer securities that are being sold to the ESOP, right? So, you know, ensuring that they've got recent financial statement, that those financial statements are accurate where possible. Hopefully you can get audited financial statements. If they're not audited financial statements, the trustee needs to understand and document why they're still able to rely on that financial information. Because ultimately, you know, the assessment that a trustee and evaluation firm make related to the value of the business is only as good as the information that they have so that they can analyze. So
yeah, I see that. I see that with a lot of smaller ESOPs where the companies are smaller in the size, so they typically don't have those. And you got, as a trustee, got to get comfortable with that, you know, the support documents of the numbers as well. And I'm sure the valuation firm plays a role in getting you comfortable with it, but ultimately you're the one that has to sign off on it.
No, that's exactly right. I mean, that the valuation firm, they perform the in-depth analysis, but the trustee at the end of the day needs to make sure that they're heavily involved and that they understand the analysis, that they've reviewed the analysis, that they've actually read the valuation report, understand it, have questioned it, and are comfortable with all the different valuation approaches, the different assumptions, the different adjustments, to make sure that that it's a sound analysis using valuation best practices. And it's ultimately that it's prudent to be able to rely on that report when they are considering the offer to sell the shares and in their case, whether or not to go ahead and purchase the shares on behalf of the ESOP. You know, and of course, at what price is the fair price, et cetera. So, you know, any ESOP transaction is going to involve a negotiation, and the trustee needs to be well informed in terms of the value of the business so that they can negotiate effectively and in an informed way. And so, without getting too off in the details on the process agreement, you know, at the end of the day, it's very detailed and really outlines a robust process the trustee needs to go through to understand the financial information being provided, the any financial projections from management. That's also very important, understanding the reasonableness of those projections, really understanding the valuation analysis, and also documenting the robust process. That's a very important point that I would like to make. You know, at the end of the day, if you're, as a trustee, working really hard to understand the business, and but you don't have a good record of that, you're not doing yourself any favors. You really need to document, you know, every decision point, why you hired the independent valuation firm, why they're qualified, why you're able to rely on the financial information, your analysis of the valuation approaches. Really document in great detail everything that you've done as a trustee to get comfortable with the business and get comfortable with the analysis, so that you can have a good record showing that you've represented the ESOP well and you're making a good informed decision when you ultimately, if you're comfortable moving forward with the ESOP transaction as a trustee.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And when you look at this, and I'm going to bring it to another topic, and this will be kind of our last topic we get to talk about today. But the in a recent blog post from the NCEO, National Center of Employee Ownership, on April 30th, the Department of Labor announced that it had reached an agreement with Wilmington Trust to pay around $80 million to 21 employee stock ownership plans. And it also found $8 million going back to the government and reimbursing for legal costs and expenses. So that's a lot of money. And I throw that out kind of at the end here just to say, you know, should that give everybody kind of a pause? And does it mean that ESOPs are too risky in terms of how that works? And what would you comment on that case, and just kind of in general, the looking at ESOPs as risky types of transactions?
Yeah, that's certainly a good question. I mean, that was a significant settlement, and certainly many people in the ESOP marketplace took note of that. The thing that I'd like to point out is that, and kind of going back to the process agreement, and the process agreement isn't some silver bullet, but the biggest thing that it's done, I think, is that it's very clear. It's a clear message from the department, and they actually made a point to publicize this. So that when the first process agreement came out, they made it clear to the ESOP community that, hey, this is an agreement with one particular trustee. However, we think it be in all trustees' interest to understand this, the expectations as it relates to this agreement, and to essentially adopt those what has clearly been established as best practices. And so, again, I think that's very valuable, because at the end of the day, the department's goal isn't to come down and punish any particular trustee or any ESOP provider or company. It's ultimately to help ensure that the ESOPs are being formed and they're being run in the right way. And so anything that they could do to help promote widespread compliance is ultimately their goal. So something like the process agreement, which really took the ESOP guidance to another level, I think it is very effective in that way. And so here you have in this settlement that you just mentioned, this recent settlement, you have an enforcement action related to ESOP transactions that occurred prior to this process agreement, and this improved communication being established. And so clearly here, the department felt that they had found trustee conduct in these 21 transactions that they reviewed that didn't meet the standards that they felt a good fiduciary should meet. So, it certainly is a significant event that occurred. But what I focus on is the ESOP world that we're in today, post process agreement. With that additional transparency, things are being done in a very different way today. And that's kind of what I focus on is, there's this improved understanding between the department and the regulated community, the ESOP community. And I think also hopefully an improved relationship between the regulator and the regulated ESOP industry. So that's really what I focus on is this is prior to that increased guidance, this improved guidance, and the way that things are being done today is very different. And that's what I think any business owner should think about is there are very many people in the ESOP industry that are working really hard to understand what the department expects of ESOP providers. They are really acting in good faith and really just want to promote ESOPs and implement ESOPs, because at the end of the day, when the ESOP is implemented in the right way, there's no better employee benefit.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I agree.
The ability for employees to be able to share in the growth and the improved value of a business is really tremendous. So
yeah, there's nothing like it.
Anyway.
No, I think, and I like kind of where, and I, what I got from all of that, which is I think really important, is when you combine good experience, when you're talking about the professional helping to put an ESOP deal, no matter what role you really play, when you combine that professional, the experience with best practices, when you talk about the process agreement, I think it kind of helps to provide really kind of a mitigation or a protection around the whole concept of what the transaction is going to look like, and also just this sense of, we as professionals want to put a deal together and create a sustainable ESOP that rewards not only the selling shareholders, but really the employees as well. And when you do that in the right way, which I think in this case, the government gave the process agreements for good guidance and best practices, then it becomes, you know, much more positive environment. And the Wilmington case certainly is a result of it not being done in those ways. So really that, I think that's good insight for people as you're talking to other ESOP professionals, is looking at what's their experience, what's their best practice, how do they go through their process, and making sure it aligns itself with the Department of Labor.
Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly right. Yeah. It's a very different ESOP world that we're in now. And I think, you know, anytime you have additional transparency and better guidance, that's always going to result in a better process. So, I'm certainly doing it in those terms.
Sure. Well, great. Well, that is about all the time we have today. So I wanted to say, Miguel, thank you again for your time and such unique insight, you know, having insight for both sides of the table, the DOL and the trustee side.
You're welcome, Philip. I really appreciate you having me.
Thanks. And for those who are listening, you can check out Miguel's company at fiduciaryservices.com if you have more of an interest in what they do in terms of helping you with your ESOP. And I wanted to remind you to subscribe to the podcast, share it with a friend, and have a great day. And we'll look forward to next time.